Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh,
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Iverson against Gil. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up? What up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name is Nick Engvall, and tonight I'm here with my guys Robbie and Mike. What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. Glad to be back for another day, another episode. How you doing, Robbie?
I'm doing great. I'm salivating at a picture of the Kobe 1 fade to black because I'm a crackhead. I'm just listening to it. But I'm good, man. I'm excited to have a nice little conversation with everybody.
Speaking of, well, before I get into my salivating and crackhead issue for the evening, I wanted to shout out Tony Pep for leaving us a review on iTunes. We're at 40 ratings on iTunes, which is super dope. We appreciate all of you leaving us reviews. Help us get to 50. Maybe screenshot this episode and share it to your Instagram story or something. We just want to keep growing this community because we're having a lot of fun with it, and hopefully you guys are enjoying it. And we're seeing how many people are listening. So there's a lot of you out there listening. So hopefully you're enjoying it as well, and you're not just listening and hate on us. But if that's the case, you know, you can do that too. It's all good.
Yo, appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Tell a friend to tell a friend.
Yeah, this WNBA All-Star lineup. So, I mean, those Kobe 4s, orange and pink, the Protro PE for the All-Star, is like one of the dopest shoes, like, in a long time to me. It's unfortunate that they're not going to get released.
Yeah, especially since this All-Star lineup was, I personally think it was better than the NBA All-Star lineup this past year. These are, without having to pick one right off the bat, I think these are all can hold their own. I wish they would go ahead and grace us with at least a couple of these, especially the Kobe 4. And I'm really liking the LeBron 16 low. Looks like the Mamba Curiel Kobe 8 to me. So I really like that shoe as well.
I'm feeling the fact that the Kobe 4 had a kind of like an Orange County sunset feel. Wasn't the same tones at all, but like a much later into the sunset feel. man, it's just, did a post on Sneaker History website, and I also had images of last year's pack. Last year's was much more uniform, so they had like a consistent theme throughout each of the six shoes they had. This year's kind of more pick your poison. Each look very different. I like how they all matched more last year. This year definitely has, I'd say, the highs and lows. There's some better than others.
Yeah.
Highs are really high. Shout out to Cheech and Chong.
But, I mean, let's be honest. Like, even the one is probably not, like, my least favorite is the LeBron 16, this black, aqua, and then really like Volt color. That's my least favorite, but it's still a solid looking shoe. So, like, kudos to the designer of these PEs for even making my least favorite still, you know, noteworthy.
Yeah.
The thing about that is it looks like a grade school colorway on that.
Yeah.
Level.
That's why I wasn't a big fan. Just, it looks like one of the kid colorways, but hey, that's a dope shoe for a kid.
Right. Done.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, like, you know, with last year's being the blue wave type thing. Right. And I actually like I like the most subtle colorway from last year, like the Kobe AD, but I wonder, do you guys like typically all-star shoes to have a theme like that? I mean, I think back to like the craziness of like, you know, the Foamposites and stuff for the NBA all-star weekend releases, and that like Area 51 theme. And actually, you know, what would be super dope is if all those people that are storming Area 51 just all had, you know, like Galaxy Foams on. The official shoe of the Area 51, Storm Area 51 event.
You know what? I pay attention to it as that was a kid.
Yeah. But no, so do you guys like the theme idea for, let's say, All-Star, you know, releases? Or, you know, like this year's where obviously there's, you know, bright colors is a theme, I guess. There's a lot of like, you know, colors that kind of connect them, but nothing exactly visually or story wise that is like, this is 100% how it is.
Only if it makes sense. I mean, you have those certain cities that have a story to them. Of course the Galaxy pack, and then the Area 51 pack, the second Alien pack they did.
Area 72.
Thank you. I'm glad I clicked that up. That was completely wrong. Sorry about that, guys. if it makes sense, I mean, don't force the story if you don't have to, because certain cities you go to may not have like, you know, some crazy, you know, landmark or, you know, some historical reference to make a cool shoe out of. So if that's the case, go ahead and just make an outlandish, just the All-Star game. Let's let them shine. So my take is just depends on where you're going.
I love a good theme pack. I love it. Love it. Like Brooklyn had a really nice one, I believe 2015. It was like this New York crap. Like, I don't know, like Subway were in the insoles, but like they're all just kind of shiny and different. They had the Gumbo League. I thought that was cool too. They didn't sell nearly as well, but I just love something that brings shoes together where you can buy more than one and have them tell a story together. It's not necessary. A couple of years ago, they did the Black History Month releases, like the LeBron 14 and Kyrie 3 and such, instead of having a dedicated All-Star pack, since All-Stars in February, Black History Month. I don't need to paint that picture too much further. But they did something to unify everything. So it doesn't have to be, but I personally really enjoy it. Nick, I have a feeling you're more on the side of like early 2000s All-Star shoes, where it's just a new colorway, like the Jordan style of doing it. What do you think? Am I wrong?
Yes and no, I guess. So I like the jersey approach, where, you know, the team, they're wearing the same, like everybody's wearing their own jersey in like a home or away. And what I liked about that is that even if you got like, you know, All-Star shoes, they were kind of aligned with the team colors. And I know now like it's way different, where you want to see the crazy colors and you want to see just the outrageous stuff. I mean, like these Kobe 4s, right? You would never see that colorway on anything probably without it being like an All-Star or, you know, some special event of some kind, right? Because that's not colors that you're going to typically see on a jersey together. But I don't know, like I'm kind of on the fence. I could go either way with it, because I do like the congruity of like, and the connection between, you know, the storyline. And like you said, like whether it's, you know, the BHM stuff or, you know, the Galaxy stuff, all of those things kind of, they give more options for people to participate in, you know, whatever that event is, in my opinion. Because like, even going back to like the Galaxy Foams, like I'm, you know, we've already talked about it, but I'm not like Foamposite fan. So like, I didn't care for those shoes, but there's a lot of other cool shoes that came out around that. Let's see, what was the other shoe? Was it like, was there Galaxy Flight Ones or something? Yeah, Big Bang LeBrons. Like all that stuff to me is more appealing than the, that particular Foamposite or even just Foamposite in general. So I don't know. I could see the argument for either way, basically.
Nice. Well, I guess we should, like, this is one of the things we should leave up to our listeners. Let us know what you guys like in the on Twitter in the comments here. Do you guys like the packs that tell a story, or do you guys just like the outrageous colors that have no connection but are just dope to see an author again?
That's a good transition into one thing that I know for sure all of us liked seeing was the Dame Lillard buying the kids sneakers. Mike, you brought that one up, I think, right? You want to talk about it?
Yeah, man, that was cool. It was just one of those, like, you know, awesome things you see, you know, off the court. I mean, we get so overcome with free agency and the contracts that are going around, how much money is being spent, so on and so forth. It's cool to see something, you know, something a player's doing good with that money they're getting. And Dame was, you know, just at an Adidas store. I want to say it was in Portland, but I could be wrong. I didn't get the location, but regardless, it was.
I've been in there.
Okay. Yeah. But he ran into like a group of kids. I think it was four or five kids. And walked up to them, introduced themselves. And he's like, hey, you know what? You guys pick five shoes. It's on me today. That's cool. I mean, these kids, you know, if they're in Portland, I'm guessing Dame's probably a hero of theirs. And for him to like, be like, hey, you know what? I got you. Pick five shoes. That's so awesome. And not to mention, you know, school starting, that took a little bit of a load off, you know, their parents. Like, hey, you know, Dame bought my kids school shoes. Like, that's just awesome all the way around. I think those stories are so cool to see, just, you know, just away from the normal things we see about NBA players and, you know, sport, you know, figures.
I have a piggyback on that. Last summer, Dame posted on Instagram that if you're a size 12, to go to the park up the street at, like, I think it was like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Of course, I'm also a size 12. Like 12, 15. So I go up there right away, and he has a U-Haul trailer with just the back opened up, and he's standing in the back of the U-Haul trailer, and it's full of shoes, like Dior, Louis Vuitton, Adidas, like every Adidas you can think of, but like designer shoes too. And he's giving them out through the back of his truck. And there's so many kids around that, like, I got caught really far away from it, so I didn't get anything. But there's this wave of kids, and these kids were getting like Gucci shoes when they're way older. But he literally rolled up to a park and just gave stuff away, and like good stuff. So Dame is very active out here. I'm sure he does like NBA care stuff too. But he'll roll up and take care of people. He's a really good guy. So
yeah,
that's Dame Dollar.
That's super dope.
I was just saying, let me hold in Gucci.
We're in this, like, we're inundated with all the BS that happens. So it's awesome to see this kind of stuff where guys just take like a little bit, you know, I mean, it's nothing, right? It's a day out of your life. It's, you know, an hour out of your life to hook these kids up and give people the opportunity to experience something that they're going to talk about for the rest of their lives, you know? So I'm all for that.
Damn, I've been changing lives. It's cool.
Yep. Another horrible transition, but speaking of lives being changed, or at least one person's opinion being changed, I want to talk about I want to talk about basically business, some business moves on this episode, but specifically Kevin Plank and this whole Under Armour commercial. I think that it's, you know, it's obviously in a rebuttal to, you know, Donald Trump picking on Baltimore. Under Armour's been in, you know, was founded in Baltimore 20 something years ago, 30 years ago, whatever it's been now. And obviously, you know, Kevin Plank was a big supporter of Trump before, you know, getting him into office. He was a huge supporter, you know, became a part of the, you know, whatever that business group was that was set up when Trump initially came into office. And I mean, it wasn't more than like 6 months later that because of all the backlash from, you know, guys like Steph Curry and, you know, just Under Armour fans in general, you know, Plank kind of left the business organization, whatever it was called, and decided to kind of step back his comments supporting Trump, which is pretty crazy to see somebody go so far, you know, from being like a vocal supporter of the president to like seeing probably, you know, I know Under Armour had some really tough weeks after he made those comments and joined that group and on the stock market. And then it was, you know, kind of walked back and he was criticized. I definitely criticized him for, you know, for at least coming across as if he was about, you know, the money over the people. And now it seems like he's trying to kind of spin the whole back and forth between politicians into a way to stand up for the city of Baltimore, which I applaud that. I think it's dope to see him standing up for the people that are, you know, basically making him rich. Because I don't know, there's criticism on all sides of it to me, and I'm trying not to be overly, you know, dismissive of it, but I think that it's great that they're, you know, standing up for the city and, you know, because hopefully more people can get behind them and be supportive of that. This kind of strategy has been laid out in front of them by, you know, Nike and Jordan and, you know, even Adidas, you know, like all these brands have already done this kind of capitalize on, you know, the political views and, you know, being about the people rather than being about, you know, the politicians and the big government or the rich people running things. So I don't know. What do you guys think about this whole thing? Kind of just rambling, sorry.
No, but it's one of those things is like, I mean, clearly, I mean, I don't know Mr. Plank by any means personally, but to see that, you know, that he actually had a change of heart and the way he thought about, you know, how things were handled, how things were being said, and the fact that he was able to put away his personal interest and stick up for a city that made him says a lot about, you know, it says a lot about his character and how, you know, that he does actually, you know, care about the people around him. And I mean, you know, of course there's an interest in, hey, I want to, you know, make sure that, you know, I'm being good to people who pay me, but it does show a lot, you know, to be able to take a step back and reevaluate your initial decision and come back to like, hey, you know what? I'm actually going to stand with the people who helped me start from the ground up. So without having to go keep, you know, down that black hole that we try to kind of steer away from sometimes, I think it's pretty cool to see that, you know, he's back to, I guess, his roots, if we like to call it, and sticking with, you know, hey, we can build this, we can make this city better, and we don't have to hear, you know, the down talking crap from anybody else. So I think it's pretty cool.
He went from coming off like Plankton from SpongeBob to pushing Donald Trump off the plane. I'm in that same breath, though. If you're stationed in that area, you're in Baltimore, and you let somebody talk crap about Baltimore, and all your employees live there, you got to say something. I don't think it's so genuine, is what I was getting to with that comment. Like, you have to make the right PR move. A lot of Trump supporters can't make the right PR move. Like, their brain doesn't have that kind of synapses gap connected. So he was just smart. Like, it's called like survival, I believe. I don't think that's how he really feels. I think he has some kind of right. Like, he has some kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? You have to be dumb to like think that the concentration camps down and the border are anything like an American city. Like, that's so blasphemous and crazy. Like, not sticking up to that, like, there's no other option. Like, you have to say something.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's so much out of how he might personally feel or had a change of heart. I also don't know Plankton. but I think it's survival of the fittest. And when you're on that kind of level, you have to play the game. If anybody has ever watched Silicon Valley, the guy that like runs Hooli, he has a hard time, like the fake company in that show. He has a hard time. What's his name? Gavin something.
Yeah.
He struggles with like what to say in public versus what he actually feels, and it gets him in trouble. So I think Mr. Plank here took a page out of his book and did the opposite. So yeah, survival of the fittest. I don't think he means it, but who am I to say? It's just my
yeah. So what's interesting is to me, he's already, you know, kind of had this record of getting into politics, and obviously, you know, whether it was his bank account that had the hard feelings and changed his mind, or, you know, he actually, you know, had some feelings himself and changed his mind. It's hard to say because you went so far on one side, it makes it even more difficult for people to believe on the other and, or on the, you know, on the turnaround. But yeah. What I think is really interesting about this is, I don't know if it's actually like, I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but if you look at like the way Nike did this, Nike essentially made the best of, you know, Nike, you know, without comparing the two, you know, videos, commercials, and choosing one over the other, Nike had more athletes, more prominent athletes, obviously having Colin Kaepernick involved, you know, with his whole situation was much more powerful in my opinion. But that's because they have the roster of athletes that, you know, can be a part of that. What I think is really interesting though, is, you know, it's kind of been like known for quite a while that Phil Knight is a, you know, a big Republican donor. And I think like the biggest problem is that we're in this weird space in politics where people are so blindly like stick to their guns around the political party and not what's actually supposed to happen, where you're supposed to be able to talk to people and figure it out, because there's big differences between people, and the job of the government is to, you know, kind of mediate and make sure that all of this, that everybody's heard and everybody's, you know, and I'm not saying that happens, because obviously it doesn't, but that in theory is what they should be doing. What's interesting about this whole Kevin Plank thing is I think I saw more kind of backlash towards it in the comments on the video and on Twitter than I expected. But if you go back to like the Nike stuff, the only people that got mad at the Nike stuff or said anything about, you know, Nike in a negative sense were basically like the people that are like trying to burn their Nikes or whatever. And
yeah.
And you didn't really see anything about, you know, let's say Phil Knight donating to, you know, I don't know if it's like the Trump campaign or not, but either way, it just is one of those things where I think that it shows just how wildly inconsistent we are as humans and as consumers and as voters and all of those things, where, you know, one person can kind of get away with whatever. And I'm not saying that Phil Knight is, but if you're comparing those two scenarios, it's a very different response to Phil Knight as a person when it comes out that he's done these things versus Kevin Plank, who is essentially doing the same things. And, you know, taking away my political views, I think it's admirable that he tried to be a part of this whole, you know, business group that Trump tried to set up from the beginning. In theory, if you had capable leaders in the government, that would be a great way to figure out how we improve and create more jobs and stimulate the economy in the United States. Obviously, that's challenging in so many ways for this administration. I don't think that it should just be dismissed that he's a supporter or was a supporter of Trump and tried to be a part of it. I think that the real tell on him as a human being will be the next time around, whatever that is, because, you know, it became social media really elevated the politicalness of all of these brands and all of these CEOs in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. And I don't think that, you know, we're done with that. I think it's going to be more and more important to these businesses. But I don't know. Did you guys actually see anything about Phil Knight's donations when like Nike stuff was, I don't know. It was around the same time of Trump coming into office, because there was also the conversation around New Balance and, you know, New Balance coming out and saying that they supported Trump because he was going to bring jobs back. And, you know, then they denounced that, you know, him and basically tried to disconnect themselves from him because he wasn't bringing jobs back and all that stuff. But did you guys remember hearing anything about Phil Knight back then? I guess it's like 3 years.
I don't actually. Yeah, no, I don't remember, to be completely honest with you. When you were talking about it, I was like racking my brain to see if I remember anything, but I don't. What about you, Robbie?
Out here in Portland, he was like super donating to like the Republican governor race out here. The Democrat won, but he was a heavy donor into that. I don't remember the Trumpy side, but definitely locally, yeah, for sure. And they just like, I mean, nobody cares about Oregon state legislation on the like global scale. But around here, it's like, oh, don't talk about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I just did a quick search, came up that 2016. So most of it is what you're talking about, like the local Oregon stuff. But Phil Knight gave $5,000 to Mitt Romney in 2012, donated $89,600 to the National Republican Congressional Committee, $33,400 to the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and $10,400 to House Speaker Paul Ryan. So, I mean, I guess like there's no mention of Trump in that. So, you know, I guess in a sense it's good. But I just think that it's interesting that nobody talks about that stuff, you know, outside of, I guess, Oregon, but yeah, here we are, you know, and maybe it's just the change in political climate in the last 3 years, 2 years, whatever it's been, where, you know, Under Armour's now kind of, you know, being looked at differently. Or at least they're trying to be looked at differently because they're trying to be more political or more thoughtful about their politics. But
so like 30,000 is a good amount of money. If we're going to keep talking about money, we really should bring up the fact that the heir apparent to Phil Knight, Mr. Mark Parker, getting cashed out $14 million a year, at least he did in 2018 or 19. All we know really, I think it was 19, that it's up like 43% from his 2000, the year before, earnings. So like, just think about that, 14 million and you get free sneakers. What?
Is that why my retros keep going up in cost? Because they have to keep paying this man?
Yeah. It's funny to say that because I just sold my Jordan 2s from 2015, and the box says $150. I was like, man.
It's too funny because the article, so I'm looking at like an article from Portland Business Journal, and essentially the 48% pay raise Mark Parker essentially shows like, he, yeah, 1.7 in salary, 5 million in stock awards, 3 million in stock options, and 4 million in incentives. It's Mark Parker's compensation is now 550 times higher than the pay of the median Nike worker. According to a metric the company first had to disclose last year when Parker's pay was 379 times higher than the median Nike worker. It says retailers tend to have high CEO pay ratios because of a high number of hourly employees in stores. Nike competitor Under Armour, for example, has a CEO pay ratio of 605. That's an insane amount of money. But more power to him, I guess. I think that, you know, obviously to keep Nike moving forward in the direction that they've been moving in the past, you know, 15 years or whatever it's been, that they've been constantly increasing revenues. It's gotta be tough. I mean, I don't think anything is really that tough when you have that kind of money, but the job itself and like the stress of, you know, probably making decisions that affect all of those, you know, 70 something thousand employees is definitely probably going to keep you up at night, regardless of how much money you have or how expensive your bed is. So, yeah. I don't know. Do you guys think, how do you guys feel about this? I guess I appreciate that a majority, not a majority of it, but a huge percentage of it is, you know, incentive based, right? Where if you're talking about a $1.7 million salary for a CEO of Nike, that seems kind of on the low side. But if you take into account the other, you know, 13 whatever million that you can earn if the company does well, whether that's stock options or not, that to me seems fair. Like, I think that, you know, more leadership roles in companies like this should be based on incentives rather than just flat out salary, because there's plenty of people that are in CEO type roles that aren't necessarily qualified to make huge amounts of money. But if they prove themselves to the company, the investors, you know, all that, why not pay them? You know, if you're making the money as a company at the end of the year, I think, you know, to me, I feel like everybody should get a piece of that, not just the CEO, but yeah, I'm probably a little more liberal around that kind of stuff anyway, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, if it's incentive based, I mean, that only gives them more incentive to push out new, better, innovative products. So, I mean, if that's, you know, I guess in the vacuum, that's the way it would go for everything that comes out. So, I mean, hopefully I can actually turn into good things for us, the consumers, so we get something new to help and push that stock forward. So he gets, you know, gets that incentive. So, I mean, although we are paying for it, I mean, but we choose to love sneakers and to consume them. So hopefully it's worth our while to get something, you know, really just, you know, something we can really talk about, you know, whatever drives that price up for them.
I got a short answer. Ain't no one needs that much money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. Like, stress is really a taxing thing. Big decisions are hard to make. That's too much money. Like, it's not his fault. Same reason why people get mad about Kobe taking that horrible Laker deal. His last Laker deal he ever had was like $30 million a year. It was like stupid overpaying for Kobe to keep him a Laker for the rest of his career. People get mad at Kobe for taking that money, but they offered it to him. He's going to take it. Like Mark Parker, he's not going to say, oh, no, don't pay me this much. But it's just like going into economics too much without having to do that. Like, the pay discrepancies in this country are crazy. So, like, that's just too much. Everybody makes too much in that sense. Like, no CEO time or stress levels are worth that much money.
So do you think like the 1.7 in salary is more reasonable, or do you think that's too much?
I mean, that's a crap ton of money still, but he's doing more work than that, or he's not even doing that much more work. He's delegating more work than that. But like $5 million is 14. That's like Nick Saban money, man. I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
But he makes too much money too, Nick Saban. But yeah, I don't know I don't really have good factual backing behind that other than my gut and my wallet says that's too much money. Go share that crap. Go share it. So go give out hundreds under the bridge. I don't know. Too much.
I mean, so if you look at Nike's revenue, right? Like sales increased 7% for the fiscal year that ended May 31st to $39.1 billion. And looking at it that way, it seems such a small piece of the bigger picture, right? A small piece of the pie. But then you look at Nike's median employee annual salary or annual pay. And this is based on retail. So I'm assuming not everybody works full time, but the median employee is $25,386 a year. So that I think definitely, falls in line with your opinion on this, Robbie. It's kind of crazy to think Nobody's going to be able to live off of $25,000 a year. Like that's not much money at all. And for a company to make as much as they do, it kind of just makes me wonder, how many of those retail employees that make $25,000 a year depend on the employee discount to flip shoes in order to cover their rent.
Yeah, that's actually a good thought. So, this is not something that many companies do. Throw some of that cash back in just to give some raises, because clearly shoes are a coveted commodity. And, these people deal with a lot in the stores when it comes to these, these raffles, lineups, these riots. So, heck, why not? Let's throw some more cash these guys away so you don't have to worry about people, taking product and backdoored and so on and so forth, and eliminate some of these other problems.
Yeah. Kind of related to, not since we're kind of harping on Mark Parker right now, but Nike did add 3,600 jobs in the past year. So they now have 76,700 employees worldwide, and they've increased 1,400 jobs in the Portland area over the last year. And I think the other interesting thing that's part of, these articles from Portland Business Journal, Matthew Kish actually wrote the articles, but one of the most interesting things is seeing that, Nike's been expanding for like the campus there in Beaverton, and they spent almost $800 million on construction so far. So it's definitely not cheap to do that kind of stuff and have the cool spot to work. But that's just crazy to see.
You know what? If they're about throwing all those money around on new facilities and, these Mark Parker's raise. You know what, you guys, you want to throw a Nike stamp on our podcast and sponsor this bad boy? We're not going to tell you no.
I doubt we'd be able to talk about this stuff if Nike was sponsoring the podcast, though.
You know what? We have to talk about it. We'll work it out.
I'm not mad at Mark. I'm mad at the system.
Exactly. But, so I'm gonna throw that one to everybody that's listening. What do you think the CEO Mark Parker of Nike should be paid? $1.7 million is his salary, and he basically makes another $12.5 million in bonuses if the company does well. Is that fair? Let us know what you think. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I don't know wherever else you can find us. We're all over the place. But we'd love to hear what you guys think. Before we get out of here, I wanted to see what you guys were looking at as far as this week's releases. Anything on the radar?
I'll go.
Go ahead. Yeah, you go.
Give me a second. I just got the new Sportlight Ewing Athletics. Sportlight is the name of the model. This collaboration they're doing with Famous Nobodies. It drops on the 31st. I've been wearing them all day, and they are extremely comfortable. Very well done. This nice little brown, pink, white colorway. Be sure to cop yours on the 31st, but that's my pickup. I already got it this week, so I'm rocking with those.
Cool.
You know what? I'll be honest with you guys. I don't have one this week. There's nothing that's really just like stuck out to me. Which one?
Lies.
No, dude. You know what? Normally, I would be right there with you. Like, you're right. I am lying. But there's nothing really that is. I guess. Be like, hey, Mike, come by me. And I haven't got that message yet from anything.
I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, it's good to take a break at times. Yeah. I think it's gonna be hard for me to not shout out the Reebok Answer 5 for like the next however many weeks it's going to come out. There's a black and royal blue colorway that,
yeah,
obviously not an original colorway, but I think it looks super dope. And I don't know, that shoe's been, it's one of the few Iversons that I never actually got, was the 5. Although I do have a couple of kid sizes for when that time comes.
But there you go. Laced up early.
Yeah. But, I'm pretty excited about those, so that's my pick for the week, I think.
All right.
What do you guys have out there listening to us? What are you looking at picking up? Let us know. I think if you're listening to this episode, we're gonna put a post on Instagram. It would be dope if everybody could just drop their responses to questions in this episode on that, and maybe we can have a little bit of a conversation around it, because that's one of the things that we're really looking to do here, and hopefully in the next week or so, we'll have actually a phone number that you guys can call in and leave us voicemails. If you want to have like your voice heard, so to speak, we could like literally put it on the podcast. So I'm working on that, and I'm pretty excited to get that going. So, but as always, we just appreciate you guys listening, taking the time to spend an hour or so with us, and hopefully, you know, you enjoyed it. If you did, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/sneakerhistory, or follow us on Instagram, Twitter, wherever else, at Sneaker History. My name's Nick Engvall. You can find me at Nick Engvall. And Mike, Robbie, where are you guys at?
Yo, you guys can find me, Mike Guillory, on Sneaker History. You guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MadWatcher789. And let's find out where Robbie is today. Where you at, man?
You can find me hoping that you sign up for our Patreon. A lot of great content you get access to. Be sure to follow the Sneaker History website. That's impossible. Follow the Instagram. but yeah, thanks everybody for your support. You'll find me around those places.
Cool. All right. We'll catch you guys next time. Peace.
See you.
Bye.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast and continue the site and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace. Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.